I'm going to be brief. There's one little thing I found today. This is great. At the HRC, Dennis has his papers there. There is a letter that he wrote in 1991, which I'll read to you. Dear astronaut selection officer, I am a civilian who would like to be considered for the one-year astronaut training program. I would be most grateful if you would send me information, application forms, and any such materials you feel might be helpful in this regard. That was Dennis. And someone said, I think Rachel Kushner wrote about this, in a way it's perfect. He always wanted to get out. He wanted to get out, burst these things that contain us. It's so great. Dennis Johnson was always up for things. I have no idea if he was a Boy Scout, but I'm quite sure if he had a motto, it would not have been "Be Prepared." My friendship with Dennis and Cindy began more than 20 years ago when he came to Austin to give a reading. Since then, I brought him back a number of times to teach, and he always got a very wicked pleasure of calling me the boss. Having him back again and again was probably the best decision I ever made. The students idolized him, and even though he never wrote a comment on a student story, these young writers were set aflame by the experience of being in a room with him and quoted him endlessly. He was bold, impulsive, and generous, and the smartest decision he ever made was marrying Cindy, who reined him in. And this is interesting, it's about cars. I remember the night he told me that Cindy was out of town, and he just found out that he could buy a half dozen used police cars for a good price, but he was afraid that Cindy would be mad at him. It was not long, however, before he bought the red Cadillac convertible that he loved, and his only regret that he could never find a good set of Longhorns to mount on the grill. And I remember seeing him driving around town, it was amazing. He cut quite a figure. He's tooling around in that car, slumped down so low his baseball cap barely showed above the base of the windshield. And I remember a trip we all took to an elderly woman's ranch where his son Daniel, just 14, kept hopping out to gather up fossils and stuffing them in his pockets. And when he fell in love with something, he fell hard. There were the years when he was obsessed with theater, and when we would walk in the back door of his house and he would leave these tiny homemade little stage sets painstakingly constructed out of cardboard and glue. But sometimes when he fell in love with something, he fell in love with it and it didn't live up to his hopes, he would be crushed. I remember his excitement when he learned that a prestigious theater troupe in Chicago announced they were going to produce his play. But when he arrived for the dress rehearsal, he was stunned to discover that a theremin was being used to weave a thread of eerie background music into the production. Dennis hated it. He spoke to the director and the producer, but they wouldn't budge. So that night, after everyone had left, Dennis snuck back into the theater, snuck the theremin under his jacket, went out and pitched it into the Chicago River. He was a passionate man, but also an endlessly generous man, as the kids on the show was saying. When he walked into the center one day and heard Tony Giardina singing a Jim Reeves song, I believe it was Make the World Go Away, he listened for a while and then showed up the next day to present Tony with a freshly burned CD of Jim Reeves' greatest hits. One of the last times he was in Austin, he would go down to the AA meetings on 7th Street, you know, under the bridge, where most of the attendees were homeless. And I remember how moved he was by how open and welcoming they were with him, and he kept in touch with them for years. His last visit, it's ridiculous. But it was a year and a half ago, he was here for the last time. I was retiring from the Michener Center, and Dennis had agreed to say a few words. The first night he wasn't well enough to come to dinner, and he and Cindy thought it was the flu. The next day, when he was still feeling bad, they went to the first set of doctors, and they said it was vertigo. He couldn't make it to dinner that night, and Cindy spoke in his place. And now everybody was worried. When I spoke to him that next morning, he told me the latest test results said that he had liver cancer. He and Cindy handled it with astounding great calm and grace. I promised that he could come back to Austin in the fall for a three-week residency, and he wanted to be sure I didn't give his spot away, because he was sure that he could make it. We exchanged messages over the next couple of months. And if I, and these are just snippets from those exchanges. He says, I'm having a great day, thinking fondly of you too and a zillion other zany friends as well. I'm set up to see some specialists and make new friends in lab coats. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it, isn't it? Every breath tastes very sweet. And then from another a few weeks later, we're rocking the coast and loving every minute of it, even the stormy ones, maybe even especially the stormy ones. Just read Pudd'nhead Wilson, full of unacceptable language, but Clemens had a human heart. What a romp, Dickens and Shakespeare in one. And then again from 2 weeks later, thanks for the boost. I'm weak as a wet sock, but in no discomfort. I'll check out the Rebecca West. So now, there's not much more to say except that Dennis doesn't really need to worry. Because I can really promise him that we're never going to give his spot away. Thanks.